Hello, I'm Russell Rowland, author of 56 Counties, A Montana Journey. A few years ago, I visited every county in our state and interviewed people from all walks of life. I then read dozens of books about the history of Montana and the West. I wanted to explore what it means to be from Montana, how it impacts the people here. This program is a continuation of that conversation. I'm talking to people about how Montana has shaped them and what they are doing to shape Montana. Welcome to 56 Counties. I'm gonna turn water. 70% of Bighorn County is occupied by two of Montana's seven Indian reservations, the Crow and Northern Cheyenne Nations. The main draw to Bighorn County by a wide margin is the Little Bighorn Battlefield. But this county once boasted the largest wheat farm in America when a man named Thomas Campbell got a contract to provide the military with wheat during World War II. My guests today on 56 Counties are both members of the Northern Cheyenne Tribe. April Martin Chalfont is the executive director of the Wild Rose Center, a retreat center that has been offering classes and workshops in various subjects for many years. And Linwood Tallbull is a professor of ethnobotany at Dullknife College. Linwood Tallbull.
A unique thing about my life is that I had two grandmothers that my father used to say take care of them. One was my father's mother, who stayed next to us in a tent. And then my mom's mother, who stayed on the other side of us in a log cabin. These two women wouldn't even talk to each other because they were of different bands. Mm-hmm. One was Sutta of the Sacred Buffalo Hat people. The Little Wolf band was of the Sacred Arrow people, or other covenant, Tzitzistas. So they didn't even talk to each other, and I would, my father would say, make sure that their wood, they always have wood, make sure that their bucket of water is always full. Mm. So they would leave me with these old ladies, and I was kind of a chore boy. And when I noticed one time, my grandmother would say, I made too much bread. Take this to that old lady and tell her I made too much bread. Mm. So I should put it in a dishcloth, not take it to my other grandmother. And I'd say, the old lady gives you this. And she'd just praise me. Mm. And she'd praise my grandmother, mm, how wonderful she bakes bread. She'd say, wait a minute. And she'd dig in her trunk. All the old ladies had a trunk. And she'd dig in there and she'd say, I was going to make a dress with this, but I want you to give it to that old lady. And I don't have time. I don't have my sewing machine with me. Mm. So I'd take the material back and say, that old lady gives you this. She wanted to make a dress, but she doesn't have a sewing machine. She gives this to you. Oh, they were both, they'd praise each other, but they would never talk to each other.
Right.
April Martin Chalfont.
I grew up right here on in the Rosebud Valley. My folks are ranchers. I was raised by my grandmother and my grandfather, which was a custom back in the day. Mm. You're one of the first child they sent up to the relatives to help them out or whatever, and I assumed to learn things. So that was my role. So I grew up riding horses, and we played out in the hills all day long.
Did you?
Oh, just yeah. Come in from lunch. My grandma, we'd look down about lunchtime, and she'd be waving a big white dishcloth. Mm. And you know, it was kind of come in and eat, and we'd come in and eat, and then do whatever we needed to for her, and then head back out in the hills. We all had these old beater horses. They must have been 100 years old, but kept us occupied.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
It was fun. It was a good way to grow up.
But you learned to work too.
Yes.
Yeah, you were.
Yes.
So put to work.
Yep. You rode on the cows, helped fence, whatever, something like that. some of my first jobs. We should have known. My sister and I went to work for a guy fencing. He was putting a new fence up Dry Creek, which is the hills was kind of straight up, straight down, red shale gravel.
Oh.
He couldn't get any men to help him, but we were dumb enough to say we would go. We should have thought about that one. It was some tough work.
For some reason, I liked to bake bread with them. Mm. They would always hand me dough, and I would make my own little piece of bread that I put on a stove. But I always helped them. For some reason, I liked cooking. I like to be around the women when they butchered. I was always real helpful with them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my dad's uncles, the ceremonial people, would say, men usually don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
Men don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But this was given to him by his mm-hmm. grandmothers. He owns that.
So how did you get into the ironworking business?
The tribe had some sort of agreement with TARO, our Tribal Employment Rights Office.
Okay.
And I kept calling in saying I was interested, and finally a job came open as an ironworker, and I didn't know what it was, so I said yes.
Mm.
And then I learned what it was. So
you were how old, like?
Just out of high school, 18, 19 years old. It was a 3-year apprenticeship. We went through it. You went to, worked all day, and then went to school at night and on weekends.
And where was that?
At Colstrip, Units 3 and
4. Oh, is it Colstrip? Mm-hmm. Okay. Was there a lot of women doing that stuff back then? Or?
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
No, I think when I was in there was another girl the same age as me that was an apprentice iron worker. There was a journeyman from Wyoming, the local out of Wyoming. And we'd heard of one in North Dakota and one in maybe two in California. That's
really
that I knew of.
That was it?
Yeah, I think there's probably quite a few more now because welding is one of the skills that you learn when you're an iron worker, and there's a lot of women welders now.
Okay. So tell me about being an ethnobotanist. What does that mean?
Well, it means I'm supposed to know a lot about plants. My father was taught it at, he was first called an ethnobotanist when he worked at the Chief Dollknife College. And after his passing, several years went by, and then he asked if I would do the class.
Mm.
I had been covering for my dad from time to time whenever he'd go on vacation. And so I took over the class. And my father was also a historian, so I really had to, really do some fact checking.
Mm.
Because when you're talking history, you better have it right.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't make stuff up as you go along. And the one thing that I did find, though, is that all of the plants were taught by a woman. That was their role.
Mm.
They were the ones that taught the children from birth about respect, the taboos, how to dry meat, how to dry berries.
Mm.
They were taught all this, given all the survival skills by their mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur Braided Hare lived to be 102 years old.
Mm.
And he was quite an old gentleman. And after his passing, they took care of Ellen, and she went blind. And they would lead her out into the hills, and she would tell them about what where this plant usually grows, if it grows near the sand rocks, if it grows near the bottoms of the valleys or on the side hills. And some plants, like the nosebleed medicine, there cannot be a cloud in the sky when you pick nosebleed medicine. So she would say, were there any clouds? And if there was a cloud, then you had to forget it. You couldn't pick it. That was the protocol. She taught them the protocol. And that's a really important part of picking plants. And I see people that go out and just pull plants, roots and all. And when you do pull a plant like that, it's not going to grow anymore. You've taken it from its family. And it's not going to help you, no matter how good you are with it.
The Wild Rose Center exists because I think that we have to start looking at our culture and ways of trying to merge that with Western medicine to start healing people. We have done a lot of different things here. We do a lot of different programs and bring people in that are experts in their field or something like that. We had Linwood come in and do an ethnobotany walk. And so he walked, we all kind of followed him around like little ducks, but he was talking about all the plants that were here. And it was really interesting because most of the plants that were here were for women.
Oh, really?
That he identified several plants that were used for healing of women and things like that. So that was really, really interesting.
So you cut them and you always promise that next year they're going to grow beautiful and tall and strong and be very powerful. So they, you make a lot of promises to these plants. You, with Ellen Brady and the Little Wolf belief, is that we are related to everything. So that because we're related to them, then we have to talk with them. So this is when, with Ellen Brady's teaching, you had to talk with the plants. You had to have great respect for things like stones, because a stone has life also, and a stone lives forever. So when you tell something to a stone, it remembers it forever. This is why we pray with a lot of stones, because your prayer will live forever. So that's kind of the concept of what we call protocol. But plant lore and ethnobotany, we teach the Plains Indian teachings, because we have so many more, I mean, different types of plants than the mountain tribes. For instance, the Blackfoot and the Crow that were in the Bighorn Mountains. We have a lot of about 94 different plants, medicinal and food plants, on our reservation, and it's abundant with different types of vegetation. And it's one of the few places because the sheep and cattle didn't ruin it like it has ruined many reservations like the Dakotas.
Because we didn't have the right to practice religion until 1978.
Right.
And religion, I think, for Native people is tied together with medicine.
Sure.
You can't have one without the other. You have to have this whole person when you work on them. Because of boarding school, I feel that there was this whole timeline of things that not really forgotten because a lot of people still know them. Like Linwood talked about things that were maybe women's roles, but maybe they didn't get taught. And so we kind of have this gap in there. So one of the things that I try to do is figure out what is the best way to start bringing some of that back. And I don't necessarily know any of them, but I know people who are willing to come and help people. So that's kind of what I like to do is figure out.
Bring in people that are
willing to share what part they know. And then get that teaching out there.
You're listening to 56 Counties on Yellowstone Public Radio. I'm Russell Rowland, and my guests this month are from Bighorn County. April Martin Chalfont is the executive director of the Wild Rose Center, and Linwood Talbull is professor of ethnobotany at Dunknife College. April Martin Chalfont.
So what are some of the issues that you've covered then?
Some of the ones that we have the most call for here is grief.
Oh, really?
We are a small nation.
Yes.
And we're all related.
Right.
In some fashion, but mostly we're all really, truly related.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when something happens on our reservation and someone passes away, it affects a good number of people.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had, this 2019, I think, has been just atrocious.
Is that right?
We've had a lot of deaths, a lot of sick people, a lot of whatever. And so we're just continually grieving. And so we have to start looking at what does, because even off the reservation, people don't know how to grieve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no real guideline. You can't say, oh, you'll be over it in a month or something like that.
Exactly,
but,
yeah.
If you have support and we can bring someone in who can talk about different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mental illness is another one.
Mm.
And that can be something as simple as anxiety.
Right.
A lot of women who've lost husbands have high anxiety. They don't really know how their futures looks like and they can't really go back to work or something like that. And so it manifests itself in heart attacks. Maybe staying at home and eating foods that are not very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And yet if they're given the option, they will tend to pick, if you give them the option, the healthier food.
Mm.
So for example, up here, we've taught them how to make turnips, how to dry turnips, how to dry corn, make corn soup. Lately, people have been asking how to cut up meat for dry meat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of have to look around for somebody who knows that skill. And but berries, mm-hmm. drying berries, and the other day I had some delicious pemmican.
Oh.
And so a lady from the community here in Busby has offered to come up and teach people how to how to do that. But first we have to dry the meat, you know, and
yeah.
stuff like that. So just
So that's dry meat and berries, like, crushed together, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Linwood Talbull.
Basically, I really didn't like America when I first got back because they were so mean to us.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wanted to listen to the veterans,
right.
the Vietnam veterans. We had no one to go to. So I lived down here across the creek with my grandmother. And whenever I'd hear the dogs bark and I'd see a car coming down the road to the house, I would leave. I would go down to the creek and I would sit by the bank until this car would leave. They would holler for me. It got so bad that even my mother, when she came up, I wouldn't even go see my mother. And I stayed down the creek and I'd wait until after she left. And many times she left me a carton of cigarettes. And so I stayed down here and with my grandmother, and that's kind of how I handled that PTSD that they call.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't took advantage of it like a lot of people and get a federal check every month. Because I dealt with it my own way. I don't need their money. I'll give it to somebody else that needs it.
So the grief thing is interesting to me because I agree with you that I think most people outside of the reservation are just as bad with that as anywhere else. It seems like the American attitude toward that is that, you know, medication or, you know, working out or, you know, anything but actually immersing yourself in the grief and experiencing it. So is that kind of the approach that you take here? Or?
I think what we used to do was recognized that the person was grieving, and we had a mourning period. And then before we have like a powwow or something like that, there's what is called a callback ceremony. And that's to welcome the people back into society, because they've kind of been off on the sidelines.
Right.
They might have been at the function, but they're not really participating. They're just observing. And so we all respect that. And so one of the things that, you know, they do is they call you back, and you don't have to go if it's just exactly 1 year and you don't feel that you're in a good place to move forward. Then you wait until the next function comes along. But every time they have something, they always offer that. And I think it's one of the nicest things that we do. And then we just say, you know, we know that you're hurt. We know that your heart is sad still. But we want you to come back and join us again.
So why do you think that, you know, you mentioned the amount of aid that the reservations have gotten and how little effect it's had. Why do you think that is?
Because of peer pressure, a lot of it is. Someone from India can come to the United States and have a store going real, you know, and doing his best and finding that great American dream. For some reason, when the Cheyenne, when we were put on this reservation, within 10 years, we became total 100% dependent on the federal government. We became a very passive people. They can do anything to us. We're not going to do anything about it. We're going to wait for the federal government to do something about it. Many of the tribes and many of the peoples throughout the world will give their lives to save their people. This is the way it was at the beginning of time, when before the reservations, where the Cheyennes would give their lives for their people. Well, it's changed now.
And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Just extending an invitation.
Yeah, basically. And then saying, you know, you're of course you're not going to be healthy right now, but generational trauma has a part to play in all of this.
Yeah.
And so we have had some really interesting speakers come in and talking about generational trauma. And my thing about it is that if we picked it up, then we have to learn how to stop it. And how do we teach the next generation that says, this is going to stop now? Because as Indian people, we weren't expected to survive. We have. And so now I tell everybody, let's start learning how to thrive. Let's start celebrating what makes us so unique.
Right.
All of this funding, it's only created jobs for certain people. They have a director, they have employees, they have a, then they have a training budget and a travel budget, and but it's just for that small group of people. They're not really helping everybody else. So I do a lot of butchering here. The ranchers give me a lot of meat. And me and my son butchered the other day, and we're cutting it up right now, but what I'm going to do is I give this away, and my son gives it away. He's learning that. And I do it for people, because what can I do with a whole beef? And next week he's giving me another beef. So we'll butcher that also, and I'll give it away. I'll make hamburger and give it away to elders, and I'll wash all the entrails, and I'll, my son is really good at it. I call him Mr. Clean because he has to have everything perfect. So we do, just I and my son live together, and it's we share both all of the cleaning duties, and but we do a lot of the all of the berry picking ourselves, all of the plant harvesting ourselves.
we do a thing that we call Healing Week, where we bring in a bunch of alternative healers, and they can be energy workers, they can be spirit workers, they might be massage therapists, they might be psychotherapists. And when I talk about a model, this is what I would really like to see in towns on every reservation, is to have people come in for this week and have an opportunity to have sessions with these different people and start looking at health holistically, like your whole person. And, you know, maybe other communities would want to come back and take this back to their community and say, we need this going on there. And so last year was an epic year for me because a lady from First Nations in Canada had come down to observe. And then the next year she came down to participate, and she's also a native plant lady. And so she made teas, and we made pain medicines and different items. And then her community called her and said, we want you to do something. We're not sure what we want you to do, but we want you to start working on community health. And she said, oh, we're going to do a healing week. And so last year was the first time that somebody else did it, and they had 155 people show up.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
It is awesome, and it's a very small community, and they're going to do it again this year. But it is really something when everybody comes together and in a supportive environment like that.
Yeah. So when is the next one?
It's always the first week of August.
Oh, okay.
Like the first full week of August.
Okay.
Yep, so great. August 2020.
Huh.
I took off this winter, but I'm still doing teaching in MSUB and other places in the universities. And this is what I've taken off from Dalknife for the winter.
Oh, okay.
And after my heart surgery, I think I can walk in the heels a lot better now. And I'll be ready. I'll be ready for next year's summer class, but I'm also teaching my son now. He has been running my classes while I was gone.
Oh, good.
And he's doing well. And I'm trying to hand it down to him like my father did this to me.
That's great that he's interested.
Oh, yes, he's very interested.
Yeah.
You've been listening to 56 Counties. 56 Counties is produced by Russell Rowland for Yellowstone Public Radio. The music is written and performed by Aaron Parrott. Additional funding is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. More information and archived episodes available at ypradio.org. This month's guests have been April Martin Chalfont, Executive Director of the Wild Rose Center, and you can learn more about them at wildrosecenter.com. Linwood Talbull is a professor of ethnobotany at Dalknife College, and he frequently offers talks at schools and other institutions. For contact information at ypradio.org. Join me the first Monday of each month for 56 Counties.